On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Insurance Journal. And today we're going to cover brand and culture, and we have a special guest, Tony Wessling. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Hello, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Tony is the managing principal of Chromium Brand and Culture, which is a brand strategy company based in San Francisco. Works mainly with the C-suite in crafting brand and culture strategy and all of the ensuing expressions of brand and culture. And Tony, full disclosure, is a business partner of mine. We co-authored a book, which we want to talk about here, called The Powers. And the subtitle for The Powers is 10 Factors for Building an Exponentially More Powerful Brand. And first of all, congratulations on the idea for the book and actually finishing the book and working with you on this. It was, I would say that it equates to birthing a baby since it took 9 months, but that would be really unfair to women who have actually had babies, so.
I think we should say it's more like birthing an elephant because I think it took 36 months, didn't it?
is that how long the gestation period is?
I don't know. It's something like that. I think it's long. We should stay away from pseudoscience and stick to a brand and culture, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the book goes through kind of what I consider a whimsical look at using numbers to sort of dive into how successful brands and less than successful brands or failed brands have navigated the powers. And I also worked with you, Tony, on a number of sidebars in which we find that the corporate world or experiences with, you know, either on the inside or as consultants on the outside, the corporate world is a fascinating, sometimes astonishing place and often humorous place where you get these anecdotes that just shine a light on what is right and wrong about how people go about brand strategy and implementation.
Go ahead, Peter.
No, I wanted to just ask you, generally speaking, maybe you could provide sort of an overview of the book, which is going to be published later in 2018. But what gave rise in your mind to the whole concept of the powers?
Well, the powers came from, actually, I got the idea from an old film that we used to see in school. It was Charles and Ray Eames' book and movie called The Powers of Ten. They were talking about the mathematical concept of exponents. And I thought, well, gosh, you know, brands too can be exponentially more powerful. And so I started to try and understand if there were 10 powers that a brand could possess that would make it a more effective brand, make it a more successful brand. And I found that not only were there powers, good powers that can make a brand more successful, but there are actually bad powers that can make a brand less successful. So rather than being an exponential progression, the powers are really just 10 things that we've found that make a brand, either make or break a brand.
Okay. So which of the 10 powers should we start with, Tony? With so much material here.
I mean, there's a lot of material, but we should just start with 10 and go down to 1 because it'll give us that countdown kind of feeling, which I think is always nice.
All right. Cool. All right. So let's take the power of 10.
Well, the power of 10... I mean, people think that, especially in this day and age, that brands just appear overnight. And this is actually one of the greatest misnomers about a brand, is just because you have a company and it has a catchy name and a nifty logo and you quickly built a cool website with some animation on it, that you have a brand. And nothing could be further from the truth. A brand is a concept. It's an emotional concept, an abstract concept that people who are making purchase decisions, the brand becomes shorthand for things that they like, do not like, things they wish to associate with, things that they wish to disassociate themselves from. So a brand is actually a concept, and it's not the logo. The logo is part of a brand. Yes, it's a creative expression of the brand. A name is a creative expression of the brand. But even a company like Uber, people would say, well, Uber, the Uber brand. What is the Uber brand exactly? Does anybody know? Does anybody really understand? Even within Uber, do they know what Uber really stands for? It's been sort of flopping around, and that's because it's actually not a very old company, right? It's only been around for less than a decade. And so the idea of the power of 10 is that it takes about a decade to build a brand before people really have a clear idea of what you stand for. I mean, you think about Amazon, right? Amazon has been around since 2008. Since 1998. It's something to that effect. And so, you know, these brands have been around for quite some time. You know, Starbucks was founded in 1971, but it really didn't become a brand until well over a decade later when it became sort of a national concept. So this idea that you can just invent a brand, that's the biggest misnomer. It takes about 10 years to create a brand.
It does take a while, and very often, to your point earlier, people have a feeling that if I have a nice color or a cool website or a new logo, that I have a brand. And people say, what do you think about our brand? And it's more of a commercial art exercise, you know, oh, that's kind of cool. I like the swoosh, or I like the red box around your logo, or whatever it is. But it's not really, to your point, something much more meaningful and something that will actually guide purchasing decisions. I think one of the challenges, Tony, especially in the insurance space, most of our listeners are in that space, is that they're not really, this is not top of mind for them. And we haven't even really talked about culture yet, which is part of Uber's problem, or was. But I think one of the things that occurs to insurance entities is that there's some kind of crisis. There's a merger, or there's financial issues, or there's a new product line that doesn't fit with the others, or they're expanding to a new region of the country, or there's something that triggers, oh, we need to look at this. But the vast majority of people in the insurance industry think, you know, well, it's okay. You know, our logo is okay. We haven't looked at our core values in a while, but I think they're okay. I think people are generally happy. And so one of the sidebars in here is six signs that you're taking, that you're ready for a brand refresh. And it's those things, Tony, where, you know, if you just ask a couple of questions, you might say, well, maybe we should do this. One of these in the sidebar is you feel your place feels like a rummage sale. I mean, a lot of times companies, whether large and small, will have divisions or sections of their website or subsidiaries where it just looks like a mishmash of efforts, and it's not really tied together well. It happens all the time where, you know, oh, we're going to open up Idaho, and what are you going to do in Idaho? Well, we're going to sell workers' comp. Okay. Well, how does that relate to what you're selling in Missouri? Well, not really anything. Okay, well, have you talked about how this impacts not just your business plans, but your whole culture and your external expression of the brand? So that's one of the things that's within that first chapter, the power of 10.
Well, yeah, the idea is that you know, and I think that we can safely say that, with the exception of the large carriers, most insurance companies in the insurance industry don't think about branding as much as they should, and they really should realize that brands need to be refreshed about once every 10 years. That's the second part of the power of 10, that once every 10 years, if your brand is looking like a rummage sale, if your insured base is aging, that must mean that you're not paying enough attention to the brand, that you're not being relevant to the current market. And so that's an important thing, Peter, just to make sure that at least every 10 years you refresh that brand. Look at most consumer brands, Pepsi, McDonald's. It doesn't matter. You know, they refresh every 10 years, pretty much on the dot. And they do that because the customer is always changing. There's always a newer, younger customer, and you have to be capturing that market. And this is as true to for insurance companies as it is for somebody who's selling hamburgers. You have to refresh that brand once every 10 years. If you haven't done that, I guarantee you it's looking dusty, and some new competitor is going to come along and make you look really old and really irrelevant if you don't keep on top of it.
All right, let's look at the power of nine, Tony, the next power. Tell us about that.
This is complementary to the power of 10, and that is when you do create a brand or when you do refresh a brand, you've got to make it look great. None of this, well, I'll get my cousin to do the logo, and so-and-so is pretty good with websites, so we'll just have so-and-so do the website. You look at any top-of-the-line brand, Apple, everything from the website to the logo to the store experience to the way that you interact with them at, the Genius Bar, what have you, it's all part of the brand experience. And we know that even in insurance, people are looking for a pleasant experience at the very least. They're looking for a transformative experience in many aspects. But if the brand doesn't look good, if the customer service is weak, if someone comes to your office, if you're an agent, and it's dumpy, dust on the furniture, you wouldn't allow something like that if you were running a respectable business. And so why would you allow dust to collect on all the other expressions of your brand, whether that is the way that customer service interacts with policyholders or claimants, or whether that is the way your website looks, whether that is the way that the materials that you hand out, appear to the person receiving them. All this stuff is important. I had a really great experience with Safeco recently. I hadn't ever really thought of Safeco, right? But somebody hit our car, and they had Safeco insurance. The person called me up, the claims adjuster. They were very courteous, very professional, very friendly. I was something I just wasn't expecting it. And then I say, oh, Safeco, I should really think about them. And then I look and I say, oh, Safeco Field. Oh, look at here. This is a nice website. So I actually had a power of nine experience recently where every brand touch point with Safeco was done perfectly. They were dressed to the nines, as they say. So actually the term dressed to the nines is an old-fashioned term that comes from the 99th Regiment or something like that, who were always wore these really smart uniforms, it's a British military unit. And so the idea of being dressed to the nines is that you always looked great and you always acted perfectly. And that's what a great brand does.
That's good to know. I did not know where the nines came from. But, two quick things on that, Tony. Safeco, that's a good example of how insurance carriers that have a good customer touch point where they're dressed to the nines, like with a claims call like that, where a competitor company, in this case, you're not a Safeco customer, but maybe you're thinking about your current company in a different way now, like, oh, I should look at what Safeco does. I think insurance carriers pick up a lot of business by being very courteous to people who are involved in claims that aren't necessarily their insureds. The second thing I would say is, you were mentioning about Apple. There's other examples in this chapter about being dressed to the nines, but even for a small local agency, what I would say is, if you look at all of your stuff, all the all the things that are carrying your brand expressions, and lay them out at a table, or just look at them online. In that case, look at your signage, everything, you know, your parking lot, the reception area, the way you answer the phone, everything, and say, does this? What are we doing? Is it too much clutter? Many times, Tony, it's just a matter of keeping it really simple, really elegant. Just less is more. Successful websites are very clean, very simple. And just take a deep breath and say, let's start over with just a very simple concept. And the brands that are so that adhere to the power of nine, dress to the nines, just do that. It's simple. It's not a lot of stuff.
Absolutely. Mark Cuban put it really well. He said, you know, focus on building the best possible business. If you are great, people will notice, and then opportunities will appear. So that's just make everything great. Do everything to the nines.
Okay. All right, so let's move on. The power of eight, getting behind the eight ball, as it were. What happens to companies when that happens?
Well, you know the term, you know, finding yourself behind the eight ball, right, in an impossible position that you never expected. Usually that's avoidable. You know, brands get lazy. And whether that's, you know, whether that's multi-generational, broker or agency, or whether that's a company that had a lock on a particular market or niche segment, you know, brands get lazy. And all of a sudden, one day you wake up and there's a new competitor in town. Let's look at Rim, who had the BlackBerry, right? Who showed up? Apple. Who else did Apple, you know, put behind the eight ball? Sony, right? Any number of companies. You know, when you're not paying attention, you end up behind the eight ball. Or when your place looks like a rummage sale, that's when you end up behind the eight ball. You know, the idea of something being just sort of a brand being something that once you've done it once, yeah, no problem. It'll just roll on and on. Well, that's not true, because all the other players, all the other balls that are out there on the table are always all in play. They're always moving. And if you're the one who's just sitting still, you will find yourself behind the eight ball. But there are other ways to do that, and that is by making bad decisions. You know, putting all your eggs in one basket. I always think of an example of this is like celebrity endorsements, you know, where yeah, you love Tiger Woods, and boy, he's so famous, he's handsome, he's funny, and he's an incredible golf player, and so you start featuring him on all the ads, and suddenly he becomes the face of your company, and then he runs his car into a driveway post, and the police come, and the whole story unravels, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, our entire identity is wrapped up with somebody who is having, you know, some very, very serious issues in their life. Suddenly you find yourself behind the eight ball. How do you get away from that, right? Suddenly you're scurrying, you're running around, you're doing things in a very reactive manner. So that's one way to get behind the eight ball too.
I remember one of my first jobs as a editor for AM Best Company, or Best Review Magazine, a while ago, my editor says, hey, look into this story. So it turns out that there's a piano company called Baldwin United that decided in the midst of its maybe ego and hubris and bad leadership, or all combination of all of those, that it would suddenly be in the business of variable annuities. And they went bankrupt trying to be into a business that was, they really knew nothing about. So getting behind the eight ball can happen to even companies that were once successful. All right, Tony, let's move on to seven. Tell us about the power of seven.
Power of seven is making your brand a lucky brand, right? So seven's the lucky number, and the fact of the matter is that luck turns out not to be something that's just happenstance. You create luck. And how do you create luck? By being open to opportunities, by exploring new things, by pushing the envelope, as it were, by getting outside of your comfort zone. There was a study done in England where they had two sets of people who described themselves as lucky and another group who described themselves as unlucky. They told them, both sets of people, to meet a researcher at a particular cafe. And along the route that they knew that these people would take from where they were to the cafe, they put, 5-pound notes everywhere. They just sort of stuck them on telephone poles, tucked them underneath, newspaper stands, what have you. Just sort of put them all along the way. And the people who called themselves lucky showed up at the meeting point, and the researcher would say, "Well, how was your walk over?" And they said, "That was fantastic. I found 15 pounds." I saw this person, and I chatted with this person, and I looked up, and there was a beautiful building here, and I love crossing that street over there because you get a picture of that, you get a view of that park, et cetera, et cetera. And I stopped in a bookstore, and I picked up this, and I did that, and so the lucky people were really open. They were always looking around. They had their heads up. They actually, photographed them. They walk with their heads up, looking around. They engage people who they don't know. They try new things. On the other hand, the unlucky people walk with their heads down, looking at their own feet. They don't see anything around them. And so when they showed up at the cafe and the researcher said, "So how was your walk over?" They're like, "Fine. Yeah. Anything happened?" "No. Nothing ever happens." Right? So it's not they're both people. It's just that it's their behavior that determines whether or not they're lucky. And brands are the same way. Think about Twitter. You could say, "Wow, how lucky they were, right, to stumble on this." Well, they didn't stumble on it. They said, "Wait a minute, here's texting, which has gone completely out of fashion, but we can do this stuff with it." And then they got a bunch of friends involved. They said, "Hey, look how cool this is." And slowly but surely, they built this Twitterverse, right? And it's a fantastic company. Well, what if they just said, "Yeah, well, whatever, Twitter, texting is so passe, blah, blah, blah." No, they saw the opportunity. They saw the opportunity, Toyota, same thing with the Prius, right? People said, "Oh, we can't come out with a hybrid. It's too expensive. It's too difficult." They said, "Oop, dang." Toyota did that, right? So they were lucky because they did the things that people said that they couldn't do, and they looked for new opportunities. They saw what was needed in the marketplace because they were talking to people. They were not just sitting on their butts. They were getting out there looking for opportunities and learning and trying new things.
We may not get through all 10 powers, Tony, but we can always record in the future again. But I think this next one is something, it's a little bit scary, the power of six, the devil's in the details. But I think you see a lot of companies doing, evil things, don't you?
Yeah, you really do. And that, I think that sometimes the evil isn't, it may not be intentional, but it certainly is the byproduct, and so you look at, it's something as simple as Netflix raising prices on their subscriptions, in the midst of the Great Recession. Why would you do that to people, right? They're looking for escapism, they're looking for pleasure, and you go into this. Well, they got rewarded by 800,000 people dropping their subscriptions the next day, right? But it was really it was mean. It was just a mean thing to do. You look at, not to bring politics into it too much, but you look at Mar-a-Lago, the Donald Trump's resort down there in Florida. It used to be the place for charity balls. But as soon as Trump started, doing these things that were reprehensible to a lot of people, the Muslim ban, the Charlottesville event with the white supremacists. As soon as he started saying these things, the Mar-a-Lago brand started to suffer. All the charities canceled their big fundraisers. And so, when you do things that are mean or evil, as it were, your customers notice. and they take action. And so doing bad things, it's really quite simple. When you stray from core values, or if you have a vision that is self-serving, you often will either find yourself behind the eight ball, the power of eight, or you'll find yourself under the influence of the power of six, doing things that are bad.
You know, I think generally speaking, the insurance industry has been painted this way. Look at like redlining, charging people in urban areas more, people that can pay the less, that can least afford to pay the premiums are paying more. And it's very complicated because over the years, because of government regulations and legislation and so on, not just the actions of insurance company underwriters, the industry has turned into this sort of faceless and personal, distant industry that's concerned only with numbers, profits, and not with people. And we know that's not true. We know that they really do care. And so I would love to see the day where, and maybe it'll happen in the millennial generation, where there'll be more appreciation for what insurance does for society. But right now it's kind of a mixed bag, and I think there is a bit of the power of six going on there.
Yeah, I mean, people, especially health insurance, it's a major bone of contention, and when a large segment of the population believes that health care should be a basic human right, and yet more and more and more of people's livelihoods, their pay is going to pay in insurance premiums for health care. After a while, they begin to say, wait a minute, what is going on here? Is this right? They start to view the insurance corporations as evil because, in large part, they don't understand what it is that's actually done, what goes into insurance, why it is not, in fact, evil, or if it is evil, it's a necessary evil, right? So I think I don't see it so much in insurance. I'm sure that individuals would if you get a claim denied or what have you, or you don't, or your premiums go up, yeah, you think that that's evil, but that's really, there's a lot of fairness questions there. You see a lot more evil in the financial services industry, Wells Fargo and companies like that are actively working to fleece their customers. That is the power of six, when you actively work to fleece your customers.
Okay. Well, Tony, the book is called The Powers. I think we should look at the other five in a subsequent podcast. I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us, and good luck with talk. I know we have a number of talks coming up, including the Insurance Marketing Communications Association in June, and some other talks where we're going to go into a little bit more detail from the insurance side of what the power of the powers could mean for insurance entities. So thanks again, Tony, for taking time.
You bet, and I am looking forward to the IMCA meeting, and we will be discussing a lot more about how people can leverage the powers to build an exponentially more powerful brand.
Okay, thanks, Tony.
All right, thank you, Peter.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.